committee to order. And Chair Clark, you have a bill that you'd like to move for us.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is the closest we come to an omnibus bill in our committee this year. Since we have no money, what we do with this bill, we do move around one place where there is some funding from our last appropriated session, and then we also put some policy in place that you've all seen. But I'm going to go ahead and present the changes of the bill. I've been talking with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and some of...
Do you want to move your DE1 amendment first, or...
I just want to give a little bit of background here.
All right, very good.
So I've been talking with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and so this amendment will probably go through a few more changes, because I think there's some things that they want to change that I can understand and I think makes sense, other things I don't want to change. So what I want to say to the committee members is I'll move this amendment, the DE1 amendment, and then what I'd like to do is just let you know that I want to work in the next... We have to do this today in order to make Ways and Means a schedule. I want to work with any of you who want to work with me on some tweaks to this that will make it work better between now and Ways and Means, and I'll take those to Ways and Means. So, Mr. Chairman, unless people want to have an actual formal meeting to do that, I still do want to move the bill forward, and then we can certainly talk about input and so on. So I'd like to move the DE1 amendment that you should have before you to be referred to Ways and Means.
Okay.
And I can try to go through it.
All right.
So the language here is mostly you've seen it in parts of the legislation that we've had before this committee before. On page 1.14 to 1.19, we just reiterate the agency's commitment to ongoing efforts to reduce racial and ethnic inequalities in homeownership rates and to seek opportunities for expanding resources towards that. On page 2, down at line 2.31, going up onto page 3, that amount, it says of the amount that's already existing in the challenge fund, and I meant to have this in the bill the other day, and since we didn't get it in time, we're doing it today. The $500,000 of the $6.5 million that the agency advises us is available in that fund that has not yet been committed would go for... increasing home ownership opportunities for families who have been dealing with this issue of eviction directly due to a very severe disability of their child that's led to destructive behavior. And so we had quite a bit of testimony about that here.
Yes, we did.
And I think there's two organizations that indicated that they could work with them on this, in particular, and that's the Housing Land Trust and also Habitat for Humanity. One of the things that's missing from here that I definitely would want to put on here probably on line 3.3 is after October 31st, and I worked with talked with Mary about this, Mary Mullen. After October 31st, if there's still money left in that fund, it would revert back to the general challenge fund operations. And that October 31st is the date that I was advised from the commissioner and her staff today that's when they would be, they would know that they had already, what they had committed by that time. And I will just reiterate, this is the place where they suggested would be the best place to put this requirement, and so that's where we're going to do it. And again, if there's not takers by October 31st of 2014, that's this fall, then it'll go into the general challenge fund. And it can be used still for this or other things. Maximum flexibility at that point. The next part, Section 3, is asking we talked about the other day, too, asking the MHFA to provide us with their affordable housing plan before they send it to the agency and then for us to review again afterwards. This is already public information. We just want to make sure that it's on all of our minds and it's in statute. 3.12. It does ask them to tell us what kind of progress the agency is making in terms of dealing with the racial disparity gap, and I think that'll be very helpful to us. One of the things I want to say is that the agency's been making, I think, really good efforts in this area. They really deserve, lauding for what they have tried to do since the last session, a $10 million commitment to trying to deal with this. I think that's really important to recognize, and I appreciate that, and I think we all do. We do know that a lot of the problem here is with the private sector, you know, the banks in general, and one of the things that I've committed to do with our staff is to, as soon as possible, try to bring the banking industry in to talk with us about their commitment to this issue, because it's much bigger. The dollars that are committed, that are being used in the private sector, so much more than what our Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has to do. So we need to talk with that industry, and I've talked with the chair of the Commerce Committee and our committee. Maybe we'll have a joint hearing on that. We just really need to talk about what's going on in the private sector. We can have our agency doing magnificent things, but if we don't have help from the private sector, it's going to be very difficult to really make progress. However, we do want them to also report on their own progress, so that's what that section on 3.12 to 3.15 is. Section 4, 3.16, and going on into the next page, that is the language that you saw already. We had lots of testimony two different times on the Housing Opportunities Made Equitable Home Pilot Project. So what I have to tell you is on line 3.24, we put language that I thought would work that says, with the funds available to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, they shall do this project, so work on this project. And the goal here was to try to get this pilot project into statute. And I believe we've done that, but the agency has told me that there's some problems with the way this is structured in language, and so there's probably going to need to be some amendments to make it work better. And I'm open to those. Several things. One on line 3.27, they want to make that permissive rather than shall, I believe. No, that's not the place. It's another place. I believe that one was still okay. I think it was another place. Well, we'll hear from them in a few minutes. We'll talk about that. Anyway, their idea about this is to make this more permissive rather than required. And there's a place where we talk about creating a revolving fund that they say will not work, and we need to change some language for that. I'm willing to do that. We don't have notice on that until just today, so we won't be amending it today, but I do have a commitment to try to work on that and the language that deals with the challenge funds after October. And I think that's basically it, Mr. Chair. I think you might want to hear from, we might all want to hear from the agency on the concerns they have, guide us in our amendments that we will be making on the way to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay.
So with that, if you have any of you have questions about the existing language, I'd be glad to try to answer.
So just to reiterate, so I understand, there are some issues with that the agency has with the bill. We'll hear from them in a minute, and
right.
It's your desire to work with them to come up with workable language that we can't amend now because it didn't. The other concerns could not be put in an amendment that could meet the rule, and so you're going to work with them before it gets to Ways and Means and amend in that committee. All right, we have a question from Ruth O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. I think my first question would be, where is this in the Senate, and did it meet deadline in the Senate?
I'm trying to remember exactly where it is in the Senate. I need a little help from our staff. I know that they have discussed it there, and I think I'll ask one of the people who's been working on. There's different parts to this bill. Do you mean the home equity pilot project? Or do you mean the whole bill?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. So the piece that has to go through the Senate that matches your number, which would be Senate File 2638. And last I looked, it was 26. Refer to Health and Human Services with no further action. The companion to your bill is Senate File 2638.
I'm not sure. Actually, I don't know.
We're taking up House File 2116, the companion to that is the Senate File 2638, which has had no the further.
We're taking a pause.
Sorry,
2112.
2112. Representative Clark.
I'm trying to get some information on that. Actually, I want to ask one of the folks who's been working on the part of the pilot project to come forward and just tell us what she knows about that, because every day it changes.
All right. Please state your name for the record. And
Mr. Chair, committee members, Sue Watlow Phillips, interim executive director of MICA and president and CEO of Integrated Community Solutions. Representative, the bill has been introduced in the House. You're correct. It was referred to the Health and Human Services and Housing Committee. It has not had a hearing
in the Senate.
In talking with the authors, Senator Herr and the co-author, Senator Marty, it is a hope that if we can move this bill forward here, is that we would be able to conference it in the Finance Committee because of the finance issue in this bill.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. So without additional appropriations, then, would this be considered a policy bill or a finance bill?
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, there are some appropriations moved around, so it's a finance bill. That's why it needs to go to Ways and Means.
Representative O'Neill, you have a follow-up?
I have a couple other quick questions.
All right, go ahead.
So a couple questions back on the bill itself. When we're talking about, you said families that will face eviction, how would that be defined, and how would we know? I mean, if it's if someone has been an eviction's been filed against them, we know that. Someone that has had an eviction, we know that. But what does it mean? How can we statutorily understand, or can the courts understand what facing an eviction? I don't understand the language for that.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, you were here, I think, the day of the hearing with the families that, okay, so what was pretty clear is that families are threatened with eviction. They're told, if this happens again, you're going to be evicted, or maybe they've had to negotiate stopping an eviction. There's various degrees of that. So I think it's the kind of thing that it becomes pretty evident, from the testimony that we had, that it is brought up to the families and they're told you're going to be evicted. And I don't know what other thing I can tell you about that, other than that in some cases there might be an actual eviction order. One of the gentlemen who was here told us that he had received an eviction order and he had talked to his landlord and they'd been able to give him a little more time. So there's varying degrees of that. It's all pretty painful, it seems like, in terms of those families.
President O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. Correct, I understand that, but I'm talking about a definition that we could follow according to the law. So if someone has had an eviction filed against them, that they've already gone through an eviction process, they've had one eviction, two evictions, it just seems like it's a very vague definition. It might preclude people from actually being a part of the program because you'd have to define what does face eviction really mean.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, if you have some ways to tweak that make you more comfortable with it, I'm fine with hearing what those might be.
So O'Neill.
Thank you. Going on to another point, thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair, actually, my witness has an idea about this actual issue. It might be helpful to us, so let's just hear that first.
Restate your name for the record.
Sue Watlow Phillips, Mr. Chair, Representative. What we do in other housing programs is if there is a letter from the landlord saying that they're going to evict and not go all the way to the unlawful detainer process, that has provided the documentation for other housing programs that are operated on, that are funded through the Housing Finance Agency.
Thank you. Professor O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. So maybe a suggestion might be to better define that so we don't preclude people because we don't understand exactly what that means, whether it's an impending eviction, if it's an eviction already filed, if it's an eviction that's already been or gone through the court system. It would be maybe helpful so we don't preclude people from the program.
So I think the authors expressed a willingness to work with language changes if you have something. So, do you have another question?
I do, Chair. Thank you. In Section 3, can you, Representative Clark, could you explain the thought process behind having both the draft and final versions be submitted? I guess I'm not familiar with draft process. I mean, final versions, obviously, but what's the thought process behind having the draft?
Representative Clark.
The draft, I believe, comes sometime in August, and I think the final decision is made a couple months later. The idea about submitting it to us, you and all the rest of the members of this committee would be able to see it too, I think it gives us some information about what is actually being proposed And when you're when something's being proposed is when you have a little more opportunity to make suggestions and changes and so on. So that would be the purpose of that.
Well, thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. And can you, you know, I'm new here, so, and you've been here a long time, Representative Clark, can you tell me, if is that a common practice here at the legislature to ask for a draft copy of something? Is that common?
Representative Clark, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I actually don't know the answer to that. I don't know that it's been asked of this agency before. It may have been, may or may not have been. It may have been asked of others. I think what we're trying to do is make this really clear that we want the legislature to be involved. This is our responsibility too. I mean, this is makes it clear to us that we need to be on the ball with this and pay attention when it's being proposed.
Representative Clark, do you have another question?
O'Neill, yes.
Oh, excuse me. O'Neill.
Thank you.
Going back and forth here.
Thank you, Chair. I do. Representative Clark, do you happen to know how many families could be served with the $500,000 for the challenge program? I know we had testimony from folks in relation to Habitat for Humanity, and I recall something about $26,000 was enough to kind of retrofit a home specifically for people with disabilities. It could be more, it could be less, but do you have a sense as to how many families could be served with the $500,000?
Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Neill, I don't have a specific number. That might be something, I guess, I don't know if we have anybody from either of those agencies here. Here's what I do know. It varies. There are folks who are in a position where they might be able to be not too far off from becoming homeowners. There's others for whom that's a really big step, and they're going to need more help. So I think it really depends on what we need to do in terms of helping each individual family. If you need me to find out from those two agencies, those two groups of agencies that are working on that, what they propose, we can do that. I think we did have some testimony, as you just mentioned. I don't know that I can elaborate on that anymore. I do know that some folks will need more help than others. In some cases, the kinds of retrofitting or whatever that may need to happen for a home can be very limited. Let me just tell you, I had some additional testimony from a mother the other day who told me her 8-year-old daughter, the main reason she wanted to become a homeowner, and her daughter had autism very severe, is that this child, in this weather, runs out the door, and the landlord will not let her put locks on her doors that the child cannot reach. Okay, so sometimes that's not a huge expense, you know, that in that particular family at this point in this child's life. It may be something that more, you know, later on will be a bigger issue and cost more. I mean, one of the families talked about trying to retrofit a room so that there would be soundproofing so that the rest of the family, especially the other children, school-aged children, could be able to sleep at night. That'll cost a little bit more than putting locks on a door. I mean, I don't know exactly what the costs are going to be, you know. I think it will vary, and some families will be more ready to become homeowners too, may have some resources that they can bring to it. One of the really positive things about Habitat for Humanity, that particular group of agencies, that agency and the people they can help, is that really reduces the cost for the families. And we also understand that Habitat for Humanity is able to offer interest-free mortgages. So that really fits for those folks for whom paying interest is a religious prohibition. And that may be some of these families. So, you know, in that case, it's going to take more of the money. So it's really, I can't give you an exact number. I think what you quoted is possible, but if you need more details on that, we can try to get that from Habitat for Humanity and from the Land Trust.
Yes, thank you.
O'Neill?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. And going on to the pilot program, and you did mention some of the issues with that, and, you know, we have the letter from the commissioner, and she has some very, very strong concerns about it. And can you just reiterate again, when you said with the funds available, since there weren't any appropriations, how are you going to handle that exactly when there were no funds appropriated, but they had to make this pilot program out of which funds again?
President Clark.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, as the agency showed us already, with the $10 million that they have committed to deal with with what this project basically would take us forward with, the same kind of proposal with some differences, home ownership, looking at racial disparities, really making that kind of a commitment. The language of with the funds available means that it could come from any funds, including those pooled funds that they have already committed on the $10 million. they split that into two groups, if you remember. $2 million of it was for dealing with the risk, backing it up, and the $8 million was to actually make the mortgages available. So what we're trying to do here is to say, with those funds or any other funds that become available, including in the future appropriated funds, we want to establish this pilot as a way to really deal with the issue of racial disparities in home ownership. It seemed like when we took it through the committee, there was no opposition to it. It seemed to be a pretty good program that people liked. And so I'm bringing it forward, putting it into statute, so we have a structure for the agency to deal with. They do have, I think, some tweaks that, well, a couple things that they thought were pretty important. One of them had to do with this revolving fund that I think won't work the way we've got it here. That needs to be changed. But, and they wanted it to be permissive rather than that we tell them to do this. They had a couple of other points, but I think the things that make it not work, we will change. The things that establish it as a pilot project structured within the agency, I think we should pass, and that's why the bill is before you. With the funds available is meant to be, and if there, and I, this is the advice I got from our staff, is meant to clarify that any of the funds that is available to the Housing Finance Agency this year, there's no money in this committee to put in appropriated dollars, so it would have to be coming out of their other funds. Another year, there might be dollars that would be appropriated to them. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. So in regard to the pilot program, will the housing agency still make the final determinations in deciding in decisions regarding the pilot project?
Clark.
Well, they still
make
the
final that they are. The way this would work would be they would do an RFP, and the agencies that they would be working with would apply to them. And I'm presuming that those agencies are working with the community. And some of the language that they want to clarify is to make sure that I will accept is that to make sure that the agencies that want to do this are have good standing with our Department of Commerce and all of that. They will be agencies that are very capable of making the final decision about whether or not, you know, an individual applicant is able to do a mortgage. They'll have that kind of responsibility. But the agencies that they will be working with will probably be making the final decision, I would guess, on a particular homeowner. But the original discussion about which of the nonprofit organizations they work with get the money will be theirs.
Just a couple.
O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. And you know, as I'm looking at this project, I just, you know, I come from a research background and a lot of coursework and such, and so I'm just confused as to exactly how you measure closing the disparity gap. How are you going to determine that? That's kind of, if you could just help me understand that.
Representative Clark.
Sure, and maybe I should ask the witness who I have here. That, you know, there's been maps drawn that to make help us see it graphically. There have been charts that we've shared in this committee, that bar graphs that show what the racial disparities are. I think when we see those numbers, those graphs changing, when we see the maps of home ownership not be so segregated along racial lines, we'll start to be able to identify progress.
Representative O'Neill, do you have further questions?
Just one final question.
Okay.
Thank you. So I'm looking at the language again, and I'm really confused by this last line. It's on, let's see, culturally sensitive. The culturally sensitive. Oh. Okay, so 4.11, where it says culturally sensitive credit affordability financing. Can you help me understand what does that mean exactly? Culturally sensitive credit affordability financing.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I think what we're specifically referring to here, and I can be corrected if I'm wrong by one of my witnesses, but this is talking about the fact that in some religions, interests on mortgages are prohibited according to their religious beliefs. And so the culturally sensitive would be the kind of mortgage that, for example, Habitat for Humanity would be able to offer, in which there's zero interest rate. So that's what I understand this is about, and I don't know if there's any other thing to say about that. That's my understanding.
Representative O'Neill?
Yes, a follow-up. Thank you, sir. Chair, thank you, Chair. So is that already defined in statute somewhere so that there's an understanding as to what you just said, because that's not exactly what it says in the statute?
Right. I don't know that it's defined elsewhere. It might be. We can check it out. I'm not aware of another place where. And I'll ask our staff, I guess, to look to see if there is, you know, in some other documents. I do know that in my city, for example, in Minneapolis, there are some programs where they try to make that sort of effort to deal with, the religious prohibition and interest, some of the housing financing that's there. I'm not sure. We could look at their language, and we could look at some other institutions if they are. But I, as far as I know, maybe we could ask our staff right now if they are aware of any language in state statute elsewhere.
Staff, do you have an answer for that?
Chair and Representative Clark, as far as I know, that I don't know of anywhere in statute that this is defined specifically using that term.
Okay.
All right. Chris Mariani.
To that point, I think there is some wisdom of, in the different statutes to define what we mean. So it's not unusual, obviously, to have a definitions, portion of any part of our statutes. We do refer to cultural awareness, sensitivity. There's two or three phrases that are sprinkled around state statute. I actually have that language in our EOL bill. This year, but we do specifically define it because we're talking about pedagogies that are effective with non-English native speakers. So it's certainly not unusual for the Minnesota legislature to put into state statute these kind of phrases we have in the past, but it would be wise to define specifically what it means relative to the issue before us.
Thank you, Mariani. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Fisher, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This would be to Representative Clark. I thank her for bringing this forward and for the work that she's been doing on it. One of the questions I have is up in the where we're talking about the disparities report, where we're talking about addressing the racial disparity gap. The concern I have is making sure that we don't overlook another area, and that would be the concentrations of poverty. And why I'm hitting on that is Myron Orfield came out with a report earlier this year we're addressing where sometimes some things we do sometimes causes the situation to get worse. And the reason I bring this out is I work in an area where there's a high concentration of poverty, and it's interesting, so I've watched issues in those areas versus issues that happen in the suburban neighborhood I live in, is when issues have come up, if people are doing things that are not legal occurring, it's much easier in a suburban community where you've got people of varying means and available capacities. They're able to help make the reports happen to police on a regular basis. They can get on the problem much more. In an area where you've got concentrations of poverty, the capacity is not there of the people, because so many of the people are dealing with trying to have enough to live on a day-to-day basis. They're more focused on those issues, and so that you've got the opportunities where those who want to take advantage or prey on people are able to establish themselves much easier and last much longer, because we don't have the capacity in those communities to be able to help provide the resources needed and the monitoring needed to help chase that kind of activity out. And so I think it's real important that we keep that as one of the things that we look at going forward, and I think it's one of the things that, I see some great things happening in here, but I also wonder how much that might start contribute or cause further issues happening, concentrations of poverty, or how much of it goes to helping solve some of those issues. And I think that's a very important part that we need to start engaging in that kind of conversation and bring that in as a component, because I know some of the things we can't change are people who like to congregate, particularly with new populations moving in. They like to be around others like themselves for that support to be able to move forward. It's harder to address that, but there are some policies we may put in that may accelerate that. We want to make sure that we're recognizing that as we go forward. And I think if we could have that also as part of the reporting requirement going forward, that would be very helpful, I think.
Mr. Chairman, I had the chance to talk to Representative Fisher about this before the meeting, and I do agree. It's one of the amendments I think we should probably put in before we get to Ways and Means. It would be on line 3.14. After the word ratio, it would say and income. And I believe that, does that take care, Representative Fisher, of your concerns?
I think so. And that's what we were talking about, is trying to come up with the right language on that. And I'm not a good language writer, so I don't know if it in closing the racial disparity and income caps, because the income gap is in certain populations by zip codes. They kind of define those by zip codes when they go through. And I don't know, and that's where I would look to whether staff might be able to help provide us better guidance on that, if that would actually get to the question, or if somebody else has a better idea on where. In other words, it's still being crafted, and I appreciate the author working with us on that. But because it's also something that's newer, that's emerging, I don't know if there's a lot that's been defined in that area.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. So that's something that you might work with the author on.
Yes.
That's okay. All right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have an amendment for the Ways and Means Committee, and I would make the commitment that everybody here gets to see that amendment and, you know, give any feedback. I'll try to get it done this afternoon if we can.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Should we have the department come up? And
yes, okay. Mr. Chairman, I think that would be good. And we can go over some of their concerns and
okay,
we think we can meet some of them at least.
I think would the department like to come up? Would you like to move the DE1 amendment, Representative Clark?
I did move it.
You did? Okay.
I made the motion. Do you need me to make it again? That it would be...
I don't think...
We refer to the Ways and Means Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Yeah. All right. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. This is just to move...
Just to move the amendment to get it in the shape that you want.
We have it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All those opposed? Same sign. All right. Very good. Proceed with your testimony and introduce yourself to the record.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mary Tingerthal. I'm the commissioner at the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And I know that members of the committee received a memorandum from me this morning that addresses the amendment that was just introduced and moved upon. We received this language yesterday afternoon, so I apologize for the lateness of getting the comments to you. We have, as Representative Clark indicated, really been working with the councils and with communities of color over the last almost year when the original language about a pilot program was introduced and had appropriation language attached to it and subsequently did not receive appropriations. We really sat down and said, are there resources that we can use that could begin to accomplish some of these same goals? Now, without appropriations specifically for a program like this, we would have some limitations beyond what we could do with appropriated money, but we thought we could make a dent. And so we included in our annual business plan, our affordable housing plan, a pilot program, which Representative Clark described. That program not only includes dollars for mortgages to individuals who have trouble obtaining a mortgage in our more traditional mortgage programs, but it also includes an allocation of dollars that would be available to organizations that work with families in providing them detailed credit counseling, planning for budgeting, overcoming credit management issues, so that they can become successful homeowners. I know for a fact that we share the goal with the groups that we've worked with, that what this is really about is successful homeownership. We really want to see a program where counseling goes together with lending and accomplishes the overall goal. I think that when the language that had been a standalone bill that was attached to appropriation was subsequently made to be a pilot program within our existing statute was where we just saw a little bit of a mismatch and have suggested some wording that Representative Clark has just seen this morning, as have you. And we understand that Representative Clark will work with us to ensure that the language doesn't have any unintended consequences within our statute. I do want to say that one of the things we are most concerned about is something that you might think of as a technicality, but that is if the language were to say shall establish with funds available, we would see that as mandating something in a portion of our statute where we think it would potentially interfere with our obligations to our bondholders. And I think we can certainly reach agreement on that, but it is something that we've guarded very carefully because of the fact that we are able to raise hundreds of millions of dollars a year to lend to first-time home buyers in Minnesota because we are very vigilant about how we treat the language within the statute vis-a-vis protection to the bondholders. So I do want to emphasize that point. The other points that are provided here, I think, I hope, are in the spirit of the original language. There was some language that we suggested be stricken that had to do with requiring that loans made under the pilot program would redevelop and rebuild challenged neighborhoods affected by the foreclosure crisis. We think some of the loans will be made in those areas, but we didn't think it was wise to limit loans, to limit home buyers to buying houses in just those communities. And also similarly talk about rejuvenating the property tax base. We didn't think that it was wise to preclude home buyers who successfully went through counseling that moved in, that wanted to buy a house in an area where the tax base was already doing pretty well, thank you very much, that it, we wanted to limit it to those where the tax base was suffering. The final deletion that we've really suggested is that the source of money that we currently have available, absent any direct appropriations, is money that we're required to manage in a way that we make it available on market terms and conditions. And if a revolving loan fund were put together so the loans were basically lent out by these organizations where they had to sort of mark up the price of the money, we would end up in what we think is a perverse situation where we would be making higher interest loans to lower income families. And we just didn't think that that made sense as an outcome. So what we've instead proposed in some changes to the very last sentence is that it would be clear that we would allow the payment of fees that would compensate the organizations that would work with these families to go through the work that they did in order to work with these borrowers who probably, in many cases, it will take more time than a more traditional borrower. And finally, as Representative Clark indicated, we have proposed some language that would make it clear that any of the organizations that would not only do counseling but would also do the actual origination of the mortgages, that those organizations that would originate mortgages would have to meet the normal requirements and be in good standing with our Department of Commerce and be a licensed mortgage lender. And there are groups, some of whom you've heard testimony from, that do have licensed mortgage lenders. So this is not an impossible hurdle. This is something that they've told us they have the capacity to do. So again, we're very much in concert with the spirit of this. We I can tell you that my board of directors probably highlighted this as one of the primary new strategies within the affordable housing plan that we adopted last September. And we have very much been working with the community to design a program that will accomplish the goals that are outlined here. So it's not for lack of support that we make our comments, but for wanting to make sure that language that's adopted would fit well and be in concert with our statute.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions? Any other comments from the... Oh, excuse me. Okay. Representative Metza.
Which one?
Metza?
I beat it to the punch, Representative Isaacson. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Clark. I do have share some of the concerns of the agency, and in good faith, I know where your heart is on this whole issue, and wish we would have had a larger target moving forward, so maybe some of this could have been different. So I just wanted to say that I hope you'll continue to work through the end, what you've expressed already. So thank you.
Representative Isaacson.
The bill, unless something has changed before I got here, highlights $500,000 that would be spent out of the challenge fund that was previously allocated the year before, or the beginning of this, I guess, this first year of the biennium. Thank you. And what I wanted to know was, is that money specifically right now been accounted for someplace else in a budget? Has it been spent or claimed anywhere else in your budget at this point?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Isaacson, what would be our typical process with regard to biennial appropriation, which the Challenge Fund was last year, is we would typically take 50% of the funds allocated to the Challenge Fund, make them available on a competitive basis in our consolidated RFP half each year. So last year we allocated half of the funds in the Challenge Fund, and we will be announcing our consolidated request for proposals in April of this year, so next month. So it would be our intent to announce half of the Challenge Funds to be available. Those funds would be awarded on a competitive basis, with the selections being announced in October of this year.
Okay. Thank you. A follow-up, President Mexican?
All right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Isaacson, I'm not sure if you were in the room when I mentioned that what we would do, what I would intend to do is to put an amendment that say after October, I think it was 31st, the commissioner recommended, if there was dollars available, those would revert to the Challenge Fund.
I'm sorry, I don't think I followed what you said. Can you just repeat yourself, please?
Sure.
Representative Clark.
In working with the agency on this, what I wanted to do is an amendment. It would be online probably right after 3.3, and I've talked with our staff about this. We'd say after October 31st, 2014, which is when they indicated that the allocation would occur, if $500,000 isn't used for the purpose that I'm asking for it to be used here, then it would just go back into the Challenge Fund to be used for any of the other parts that they have, any of the other projects that are competing.
I understand. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Do you have any other questions? Oh, sorry. Ms. O'Neill.
Thank you so much, Chair. Just one final question, just for the agency. So, you know, we're taking the $500,000 and putting it to a special fund to help these families. Are those families currently able to apply to the challenge program for funding?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, the agency has several programs that are loan programs that are available for the kinds of improvements that would be included here, but those would typically be available only to those people who were already homeowners, because we don't really have a way today to provide dollars, for example, to improve a rental property that is for us in one individual or one family. But so this, I can't say that this exact use currently exists within our current programs.
Ms. O'Neill, do you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chairman, maybe I could also just clarify one thing that I think you might appreciate. The two organizations that came here and testified about how they would work with these families, in the Challenge Funds, we asked for there to be contributions from the private sector. And so both in project... both in the Community Land Trust and in the Habitat for Humanity is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. They are providing ways to help meet what the challenge grant requires. So, I mean, I think that's just something that we can all appreciate as part of, that's some of why I think the commissioner and others in their agency suggested that would be the place that we would put that. That would be the place that we would try to meet the needs of those families.
I think the commissioner would like to make a comment, too, can he?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just a clarification. Part of the use of the Challenge Fund is something that we call our Community Impact Program, which is used for single-family homes. And if there were a group that understood that this was a need and applied for the use of funds under the Community Impact Program, which includes a variety of things like home improvement, acquisition and rehab of foreclosed homes, et cetera, community land trust homes. This could be an eligible use under that program. We've not ever seen an application for this particular use, but it's conceivable that someone could propose that and that it would fall within the eligibility guidelines.
We're running out of time, so do you have a brief question, Representative O'Neill? Representative Fisher, you had a question?
More along a little bit of a statement, and I'll try to make it real brief to the commissioner, is, one of the things that we were talking about under this disparities report is also trying to look at the concentrations of poverty, and I know that one of the things that you folks have done a great job on is preserving housing stock, which also sometimes goes into that, is usually in the same area where we have concentrations. And I think that's one of the things that we have to keep in mind as we're looking at these things going forward. Some of this is going to be needed so that we can, make sure that we're not losing opportunities where we've got federal dollars that are tied in that if we don't preserve, we lose entirely. And so to try and figure out what's going to be a good balance and, how we're going to do that in the future where we know we have to keep on doing these things, but what are the ways that, because we're doing things in one area, how can we best make sure that we're addressing that concentration from another outlook? Because I want to make sure that you're very, I'm being very clear to you that I want to make sure we don't lose those opportunities as we go forward, but thinking creatively with the other funds that we have out there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just move that the bill as amended, House File 2112 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All right. President Clark renews her motion to refer the House File 2112 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion carries. We have some minutes. Should we approve the minutes? Representative Metza, would you like to take care of that first? Representative Metza moves the March 24th minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes are approved. And I believe that's all of our business for today. So without further ado, I'll say we are adjourned.